Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschaktide Shatayane Vandeham Sri Guru Shriyatav Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parajana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakan Vitamascha Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Outside, the sun is gradually making its descent toward the end of another beautiful sunny day at Pacific Beach. The world is very nice, except for some problems, especially that we have to die. That's a major problem. We have to suffer disease. That's another major problem. We have to suffer taxes. That's another major problem. We have to work. Oh, if we start thinking about the problems, then we can't even enjoy our nice afternoon at Pacific Beach. And that is the situation of the material world. There's some enjoyment is there, but there's a lot of suffering. A lot of suffering. All the situation of the world is just pressing on us. Yeah, there's another birth. Birth is also suffering. Birth, death, old age and disease. Again and again and again. Punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. So this is the situation. A little bit nice. A lot of suffering. What to do? Oh, this inescapable cycle of birth and death, birth and death, birth and death, on and on and on. Punarapi janani jatare shayanam. Again and again getting born, again and again dying. Always we're looking for happiness. However much we look, we can't escape. There is birth, death, old age and disease. So these are the real problems of life. Not how to get more time to lie on the beach. That is not the real problem. We lie on the beach and after some time we have to lie in a coffin. Then we have to lie in a mother's womb. Then again, born again, die again. So, we are helpless beings, tiny little beings, in a massive universe that seems very cruel to us. We have no shelter. We cannot escape. Just like if there's a nuclear bomb, what shall we do? Where shall we go? Shall we order another ice cream? You see, there's another nuclear bomb is coming, landing on our head. There's another 3 minutes before it comes. Eat one more ice cream. Enjoy while you can. Where is there? What will you do? There's no shelter. Wherever we go in this world, there's no shelter from birth, death, old age and disease. Whatever insurance policy we may take, there's no shelter. We can get a very secure house in a gated community with burglar alarms and security guards, but there's no shelter from birth, death, old age and disease. This we should see. This is the beginning of intelligence to see this. Unfortunately, modern education, it makes us intelligently foolish or foolishly intelligent, whichever one you want to put first, because it increases our ability to live in a great illusion, that we can live a little bit comfortably, in the midst of a great illusion. In other words, if you get an education, suppose it's what's called a good education, you're supposed to have a better chance to exist in this illusory bubble of happiness, so that you can eat more ice creams. You can afford more ice creams. You can afford more toys, fancy car instead of some old broken up jalopy. But the real knowledge of our existential position, that we have to suffer in this world, then no one wants to discuss it. So that is not knowledge. That education in the modern context means to increase our ignorance. So what to do? We're in a situation. What can we do? Take shelter. Where shall we take shelter? Where shall we get shelter from all these problems? Actually, everyone knows in the back of their mind that we are suffering, but no one wants to think about it. Yes, so we take shelter of illusion. We like to think, yes, we shall be happy on the beach. We shall be happy in a family life. We shall be happy with nice car, nice house. Nice job. What is that? No such thing. We shall be happy. No, I'm not getting happy. So drink. Take shelter of intoxication. A drink, that's boring. So try something else. By the grace of some illicit scientists, we can get all kinds of illicit intoxication. And they have more fun also, because it's illegal. Illegal intoxication is more exciting than legal intoxication. So we can take shelter of some pills or injections or sniffs or whatever way they invented to get intoxicated. Or we can take shelter of illusion more and more. Go to see some movie. Go to see a movie means just to forget what I am, where I am, what I'm doing, what my responsibilities are. Go and watch a movie, 90 minutes. Read a book, read a novel, read a magazine. Read in the magazine what the celebrities are doing, what Prince Harry is doing. You can read. It's very interesting to read what he's doing. Of course, there are thousands and millions of people doing what he's doing, but because he's Prince Harry, it becomes more interesting. So, in this way, we take shelter of illusion. What else? We can take shelter of work. Workaholic. There are not too many workaholics in Pacific Beach, are there? I guess you get them more in New York and Chicago, probably. Here it's what do they call it here? Beachaholic. Beach bum. Like that. So, either way, beach bum is taking shelter of the beach, and the workaholic is taking shelter of work, and the alcoholic is taking shelter of alcohol. But still, what else is there we can take shelter? Take shelter of religion. That can also be some kind of illusion. Just to imagine I am saved because I believe in something. That's also one kind of illusion. If there's no actual spiritual practice, if we think that religion means just I believe and then everything's okay, with no actual spiritual life, no actual spiritual understanding, no actual spiritual commitment, then that is a kind of intoxication. As Karl Marx said, religion is the opium of the people. So that can be true also. We like to take shelter, but there's no shelter from birth, death, old age and disease. Or is there? Some people say that, well, you just have to stop birth, death, old age and disease, and then you just don't exist, that's all. But there is shelter. That is the good information. There is shelter from this. The the very person who has informed us of these terrible problems of birth, death, old age and disease. That is Krishna. He has clearly informed us about this. And he's also giving us the solution, how to get out from this. It's not a hopeless situation. We're not in a situation where it's just like being in machine gun fire with no hope, just like in the First World War. There was this trenches, and people for months and months they'd be stuck in trenches. And if you come out, then you're shot down by machine gun fire without any hope. And so from time to time, some of the soldiers, they just get so frustrated of living in a mud trench for months and months and months that they'd jump up and attack the enemy position. And they'd run about 10 feet and then they'd be shot down. And that's all. Hopeless. We're not in a hopeless situation. We are very small, that is true. We are tiny living beings. We are just in a tiny space. We think the United States of America is a great country. Yeah, it's a great country. In this world, it's a great country. For the time being, there have been so many great countries. They've come up and gone down. This Iraq was the center of civilization at one point, so we're told. Now Iraq is just, well, anyway, you know, you see the news, you've heard the news. So Britain was the great country. Now they mock Britain as the poodle of America. So there have been so many great countries. But anyway, what is this little earth, tiny little earth? In one tiny little universe, we don't even know what is the extent of this universe. And our life, what is our life? Just sneeze and it's over. It's momentary, flickering. So we are tiny, but there is shelter. There is a situation beyond birth and death. It is our natural hankering for full happiness, full satisfaction, full shelter. But we have to know where to find that, how to find that, who is that shelter. That shelter is a person. That person who can give us shelter is standing just there. That is Krishna. Krishna can give us shelter. He is the shelter of everyone. Now, why are we in this material world? We are meant for loving. We are meant for peaceful life. We are meant for happy life. We are tiny, tiny living beings. We are not independent. We are controlled by the laws of material nature. That we cannot deny. Of course we can deny, but that is foolishness. We cannot avoid old age, disease, death, rebirth. So just to admit that we are controlled, therefore there is a controller. That is the beginning of our liberation from this material existence. We are in this material existence because we do not recognize our ultimate shelter. We are all meant for love. Real love is in the spiritual world with Krishna. But love means voluntary service. Love means that we give ourselves not out of force, not out of duty, not out of compulsion, but out of the natural tendency of our heart. So in the spiritual world is the world of love, the world of love of Krishna. If we submit ourselves to Krishna, then we remain always in the spiritual world. But love means, if we have to serve Krishna with love, that means we have independence to serve Krishna or not serve Krishna. If we don't like to serve Krishna, then there's Pacific Beach, there's Iraq, there's the whole material world. There are so many places. And not only human life. There's human life, There's cat life, dog life, tree life, worm life, bat life, mouse life, demigod life. There's so many situations we can choose one after another, or rather we take one after another, forgetting Krishna. If we don't like to serve Krishna, Krishna gives us many, many opportunities to try to be happy without him, but it is not possible. So this material world is a world of suffering. That must be, because if we're not related with Krishna, if we don't agree to serve Krishna, then there must be suffering. The suffering in this material world is birth, death, old age and disease. Actually, these are symptoms. Just our real suffering is being separated from Krishna. Without Krishna, we cannot be happy. So if we simply agree to serve Krishna, I am meant for Krishna. Krishna is so beautiful, Krishna is so kind, Krishna is so sweet. If I simply submit myself to Krishna, then all my happy life begins and all the problems of this material world evaporate. If we simply understand this and act on this, then there's no more birth, death, old age and disease. The very cause of suffering in this material world is forgetfulness of Krishna. So if we remember Krishna, then we no longer have to suffer in this material world. Of course, those who are true devotees, they serve Krishna not thinking that I have to serve Krishna to get free from suffering. On the platform of pure love, one doesn't think I have to get free from suffering. On the platform of pure love, one only thinks of the pleasure of the beloved. So that is the higher stage of Krishna consciousness, where one thinks only how Krishna will be satisfied in everything that I do, in every step that I take, in every word that I say. How will Krishna be pleased with me? If one thinks like that, then for such a person there's no question of any suffering, because such a person is absorbed in the pure love of Krishna. So in this material world there is also love, but love of any person or love of any country or love of any baseball team or love of any dog or cat, that cannot fully satisfy us. Only love of Krishna, who is complete, pure, eternal, only that can fully satisfy us. So how shall we take shelter of Krishna? Well, first we have to know who is Krishna. We have to hear about Krishna, how Krishna is pleased. We can take shelter of Krishna very easily. He makes himself available to us by his name. The name of Krishna is Krishna. If we chant the name of Krishna, then if we call out to Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This calling out to Krishna, Krishna, I'm your eternal servant. I'm meant to serve you. Please engage me in your service. By calling out to Krishna like this, then Krishna, he is ready to accept us. We can take shelter of Krishna by association with his devotees. Krishna manifests himself through his devotees, those who have dedicated themselves in the service of Krishna. We take shelter of Krishna through service to Krishna. There are so many ways we can serve Krishna. Just like you have all come here, you can make some offering to Krishna. Krishna has kindly appeared among us in the deity form so that we can bring offerings, we can bring flowers, we can bring fruit, we can bring vegetables, we can make some monetary contribution. This is all pleasing to Krishna. If we think how Krishna will be served nicely, we can sing for Krishna, we can dance for Krishna, we can perform various services. And in this way, by serving Krishna, which is our natural propensity to serve Krishna, then automatically we feel satisfied. Automatically we can feel that now we are in the shelter of Krishna. Jai Shakal Bipod Bhakti Vinod Balen Jokanonam Gai. Simply by chanting the name of Krishna, simply by serving Krishna, all difficulties and troubles of this world become minimized. Of course, the condition of this world is there. One cannot avoid, as long as one is in this world, the situation of the world is there. But we become aloof from that, detached from that. We do not suffer as materialistic people suffer. Materialistic people suffer as they see and feel their body, which they're most attached to, rotting away. This in material life, we are in bodily consciousness. We think, I am this body. This body is me. We don't know anything beyond the body. We don't know we've had so many other bodies and that we are due to get many other bodies. So as the body gets older, then we feel the pain in various places. We can experience how all the bodily functions, they're gradually winding down. The sight, the hearing, the tasting, the digesting. So it's a great pain for people who do not know that this body is temporary, but I am an eternal servant. I am spiritual by nature. I am an eternal servant of Krishna. So for materialistic people, the action of time is greatly distressing. How the body, which they perceive themselves to be, the body grows old and worn out. The sign is there that the death is coming and they don't know what to do. So they try to ignore that and pretend they're still young and try to play tennis at the age of 60 or go surfing. But the body is old. Or they apply some lotions, put some thick powder on their face to try to make them look younger. But there's no shelter from time. It's very painful for materialistic people. But for devotees, now Krishna is calling me to him. They know this, the pain of the body. That is Krishna's sign, just to remind me. Don't tarry in this material world. Don't wait here. Know that you are not the body. Know that inevitable death of the body is coming. So practice service to Krishna very seriously now. Now is the opportunity. Now we should practice very seriously so that we don't have to get born again. So that we can go directly to Krishna in the spiritual world. This is the opportunity. In human life, there are so many different species of life, 8,400,000 species of life. This human life is the opportunity to get free from birth and death, to go to Krishna. Especially in the present time, the modern age. When we say the modern age, we don't think the last 20 years. Vedic time scales they inform us there are cycles of ages. So the modern age means this Kali Yuga that's been going on now for some 5,000 years. So in this modern age, the process to take shelter of Krishna is very easy. In other ages, one has to perform very difficult penance and austerity, or one has to perform very precise rituals, chanting mantras, with sacrifices. But in this age, simply by chanting the name of Krishna and serving Krishna in the association of devotees, offering Krishna a flower, offering Krishna our service by chanting his names in these very simple ways, we can satisfy Krishna, take shelter of Krishna. Krishna is willing to give us shelter, but we have to submit himself to ourselves to him. As long as we are thinking that I don't need any shelter, I'm okay, I can do what I like, I'm tough, I'm a real man, I don't need anyone to tell me what to do. As long as we are thinking like this, this foolish pride of being independent, then we cannot take shelter of Krishna. For our foolishness, we have to suffer terribly. So simply to submit. Krishna, I am very small. I am dependent on you. Please take me in your shelter. Then we can have shelter. And shelter is our immediate need. We're in a cruel world. But beyond that, there is the land of pure love. Shelter, that is the beginning stage. That is the basic condition of our relationship with Krishna. Just like a child, the baby unquestioningly takes shelter of the mother. So in the same way, a devotee unquestioningly takes shelter of Krishna. But as the child grows, then the relation with the parents that develops more, and the child is not just cared for by the parents, but the child learns to serve the parents. And of course, in modern life, that may be something different, but that's the normal, natural society. The child learns to serve the parents. So that becomes more developed relationship. So in the same way, we take shelter of Krishna. Now we're in the womb of our spiritual life. We have to take shelter of Krishna. But gradually, as our devotional service develops more and more and more, we learn to serve Krishna more and more and more with all our activities, with all our words, with all our thoughts. And in this way, we become fully Krishna conscious, fully happy in Krishna's service. So, that's a very basic understanding of what is Krishna consciousness. That begins with taking shelter of Krishna. Bhavantam evanu charandarantara prashanta nishesha manoratantara kadaham aikantika nitya kinkara praharshiyashami sanata jivitam. One of our great acharyas, spiritual teachers, is Yamuna Acharya. This is some more than 1,000 years ago. He made this very nice verse in which he is praying, when will I be in that situation? He's praying to Krishna. When I will simply be satisfied to follow you and serve you. That I won't have any other thought than to serve you. So when I come to this condition, then all the disturbances of the mind is always thinking, let me do this, let me do that, let me go here, let me go there. But the mind becomes very peaceful when we simply take shelter of Krishna. So he is saying that at that time I'll be fully joyful, knowing that I have the shelter of a master who is fully competent to protect me. So this, when I will be, he's praying for the position of eternal service. In material life, we don't like to think how we shall serve. But spiritual life means not to think of oneself as the master, but to understand one's happy position as the servant of Krishna. So, Hare Krishna. Would anyone like to make any question or comment on this? Yes, please. Do you have this extra mic? It's broken. All right, so please say.
Yeah, you know, the human form of life is very rare, very often. good love. But how do these small forms of life, they come to the stage like a human form? Only they have to come to the human form before they can understand Krishna.
How living beings who are presently in the form, very low forms, how do they come to the human stage? Well, they were in the human stage at one point, but due to sinful activities, one is forced to take birth in lower species. So, by evolution they come, not by this Darwinian idea of evolution, but by passing lives in lower species, they become free of the reactions to, they're in the lower species as a reaction to sinful activities. So when the reactions are paid off, then again they become eligible for human life. Or you can go and chant Hare Krishna everywhere, and those living beings in lower species, by hearing that, they will be free from the reactions and get human life. So that's how the devotees help those in lower species. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was singing the names of Krishna, going through the forest, and all the living beings in the forms of animals and trees and grass, they were not only getting human life, they were completely liberated just by hearing his chanting. So you have your kartels, eh? You like to chant. So you can go and chant by hearing that name. Everyone will be benefited. How much free will do we really have? Well, there's no free will-ometer to measure. So you can't say this much, whatever. You can measure distance in millimeters and kilometers. You can measure, there are so many, from angstroms, so many units of measurement. But free will we have in the human life, we can choose to do right or wrong on the material level. And we can choose to pursue spiritual life. We have destiny to some extent. That is there, but destiny is not all in all. Destiny means that due to what we've done in previous lives, we get a certain body in a certain situation, so we can't change that. We have a certain body. We can change it to some extent by plastic surgery, or you can have a sex change operation. So you can change that to some extent. But the basic apparatus we have, we can't change that. And we also have, from previous lives, we also have a certain mindset. And that is, we take birth in a certain situation according to our previous activities, our karma. And the situation we take birth in also influences our consciousness. So, in the human life, we have choice. But even that is influenced by our previous karmas and by the association we get. So, the devotees of Krishna, they move in this world and try to give people knowledge of Krishna. If people can get that knowledge of Krishna, then their whole situation can improve very greatly. As long as people do not have knowledge of Krishna, they can only execute their free will in matters of right or wrong on the material platform. And very often they don't understand that either. Without having proper knowledge of our material situation, what to speak of our spiritual situation, we cannot understand what is right or what is wrong. Just like there are many people who think that there's nothing wrong with killing animals and eating animals. But we understand from Vedic knowledge that generally this is a sinful activity. But unless we have that knowledge, people cannot know. So we have limited free will, and our free will increases with our knowledge. The difference between human life and animal life is that in human life we can acquire and cultivate knowledge. So, and in someone who's actually intelligent in this human form of life, they make this inquiry, Brahma Jignyasa, Atato Brahma Jignyasa. Having attained human life, one should inquire into the nature of reality. Why am I here? Why are we suffering? And on the basis of that, one should learn to act in such a way that we perform activities that are for the greatest benefit for ourselves and for others. So actually in human life, we all have a duty to inquire into the nature of reality. Unless we do that, we are misusing our human life. Even the platform of being good or bad, without inquiring into the nature of spiritual reality, is incomplete. So free will we have, especially in the modern age, people are kept very dull by the whole educational system, the whole culture keeps us very dull, so that if we think that if we have a house in Pacific Beach, that's it, that's our success. Or we think if we have a big car, or we can drink Coca-Cola or something like that, this is the perfection of life. So it's a very dull culture. But actual culture means that culture in which inquiry into the Absolute Truth is meant for everyone. Everyone knows that. So our free will, we can exercise, we have free will to the extent that we have knowledge. If we don't know what we can do, then we can't choose what to do. So human life is meant for cultivating knowledge of our existential position. Without that, we're just animals. The animals, they can only eat and sleep and fight. They can't do much more. So without knowledge of who we are, what is our actual position beyond simply bodily existence, then we have no more free will than animals. So human life is meant for spiritual cultivation. And this Krishna Consciousness Movement is meant to create a situation in human society in which the consciousness of our spiritual necessity is the culture of the whole society, without which people are animals and they degrade more and more and more. How do we know that we're in the highest form of human life?
How do we know when we reach it?
Well, you should know. If you're in human, you should know.
But I'm saying the highest form.
How do you know that it's the highest form?
No, the highest form of human life.
What's that, the highest form of human life?
There's no measurement, right?
The highest form of human life means the highest consciousness. Right? Does it mean to be an Olympic champion? I don't think so. The highest stage of human life means the most developed consciousness. Is it not? This Albert Einstein was voted by Time magazine readers as the greatest man of the 20th century. In social terms, it would seem that Adolf Hitler was the greatest man. He had the greatest impact in social terms. But Einstein, because he was considered to be the most intelligent person, but he was only concerned with the material, with the nature of this world. So the highest consciousness is that consciousness. Now you can just understand by your own intelligence. The highest consciousness is that level of consciousness in which we have no selfishness and we simply act for the benefit of others. That is the highest consciousness. But then we have to understand what is actually the benefit of others. Because the desire to help others is good, but if that is misplaced, it can actually be harmful. Just like many people in the 20th century, they thought that they would do good for others by bringing in communism. It seems like a very good idea. Everyone should be equal. But the actual result was something terrible in many cases. So we have to know how we can actually benefit others. Mother Teresa was lauded as a great saint for her work among the poor in Calcutta. I was living in Calcutta when she was there. But there are so many poor people. And she may have helped a few people. She had homes for the dying people. So people living on the street, when they were dying, they would be brought to her home. So after living on the street all their lives, they could die in her home. So I don't know how much actual benefit they got. And if they recovered in her home, they'd be back on the street. So she was lauded as a great saint who helped so many people. But how many people can you help? And if it's help for the body only, is that really help? And the body has to die. So to help the body, it's like painting a sinking ship. The ship is sinking, but it needs a new coat of paint. So before it sinks with us on it, we'll apply a new coat of paint so we can look and say, oh, we did a nice job. It looks so nice. So helping the body, or that is not actually helping. We should help people so that they can get free from suffering eternally and achieve full happiness eternally. But we have to have knowledge how to help people in that way. So the highest form of life, the highest stage of life, is to have full, clear knowledge of our existential position and act in a manner to help others to come to that highest level. And of course, we can only do so if we are ourselves on that path or fixed in that consciousness. So you had another part of your question? Or was that it? How can we not remember our past life? Yeah, it's an often asked question. Yeah, we're in this material world with the idea of enjoying it. We don't want to remember Krishna. So in every life, we start off with great hope. You'll see the little puppies are jumping around with great hope, very happy. The young babies are jumping around with great hope. So we begin every life with great hope. We don't want to remember Krishna. So Krishna arranges that we're in a situation where we forget him, we forget our previous lives, so that we can get on with the business of trying to enjoy this present one, so that we can be fully in the illusion that, yes, now I'm really going to have a good time. And we go on and on and on like this. There you are, in beautiful Pacific Beach. Some problem. Does divine joy signify anything? Divine joy means Krishna is fully joyful. We are fully joyful in Krishna's service. It's not signifying anything else. That is the actual situation of our existence. We're meant for that. We're meant for living in divine joy. It doesn't signify anything else. That is the actual situation we are meant to be in. Always happy in Krishna's service. Does it mean that what? Yeah, if we try to serve Krishna to make him happy, of course he's always happy. But if we act in a manner that will be pleasing to him, then we shall also be happy. So actual happiness comes from serving Krishna. Yes, please. Yeah, there's one over. Yeah, just 1 minute. Yeah. Material energy is created by Krishna. Why do we blame the material energy? We don't blame the material energy. Material energy is acting in a way that is meant for us. It's our own fault we're here. We're not blaming Krishna or the material energy. Yeah, you get the house in Pacific Beach. You can suffer there. You can suffer in Pacific Beach. In the illusion that now I have a nice house.
And I can pray to Krishna and I can surrender to him. Isn't it? I'm close to Pacific Beach Temple.
That is the only saving advantage of Pacific Beach. That Krishna is here.
So once you surrender, what happens to the...
So once you surrender, now I've surrendered to Krishna, now I can enjoy life without any problem. Now I can have a nice house in Pacific Beach. That is, we have to be careful of cheating ourselves in the name of devotion to Krishna. That, yes, I have this big nice house, but it's only meant for serving Krishna. We cheat ourselves. But actually our consciousness is to enjoy the house. But we can't cheat Krishna. We should do everything for the pleasure of Krishna. And not in the name of service to Krishna, make simply a show of doing so, while our real intention is to enjoy this material world. That is a... We can fool others maybe, we can fool ourselves, but we can't fool Krishna. What happens to the karma balance? Finished. If we surrender to Krishna, no more. Yeah. There's one question here first, please.
Our state of mind changes so much.
Our state of mind changes so much. Did anyone ever notice? every moment.
So higher consciousness,
flickering.
We are in higher consciousness, sometimes it goes down.
Sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down. Therefore we have to practice bhakti yoga. The regulated activities of service to Krishna, daily chanting, following regulated principles, regulated life, rising early, that will steady our consciousness in devotion to Krishna. Otherwise, it's wild. The mind is wild. Yes, please.
I was reading in one of the magazines, in Origins, I think it says something about how they found a fish that they thought had been extinct for millions of years,
mm-hmm.
and then they find the fish. And I just wonder, why don't scientists throw out the theories that are no longer backed up and they find the fish? And Also, there was another interesting thing. A scientist said that this, what we see around us happening because of the Big Bang, would be like an unabridged dictionary being the result of an explosion in a printing shop. So why do they continue with outrageous theories that don't seem to lead anywhere, and they seem to be satisfied with them?
Yeah, you've read in Origins magazine about a fish, what is that, a fish fossil? No, a fish species was supposed to have been extinct millions of years ago. Or there are fossils of, which show that life has been on this planet for millions of years. So why don't, and even a scientist says that, actually so many scientists say no, that According to the theory that the world is as it is as we see it now, to that have been possible due to a Big Bang would have required so many different variables to have existed. For instance, there should be the right temperature. There should be the right, to get that right temperature, the chances of that are like 10 to the power of minus 1 billion. And then you have to have the right combination of chemicals, and that's also 10 to the power of minus 1 billion. And you put all these variables together, and you can put a series of zeros which will fill the whole room. So it's scientists themselves say that this idea of a Big Bang, that everything is as it is by chance. More and more scientists are recognizing that, but some doggedly refuse to accept it. The clue is in the word doggedly. They don't like to accept. It's called scientism. That it's a dogma, that they want to believe, because they are, after all, human beings. So they have some worldview which they are doggedly attached to, and they don't want to let it go. They don't want to admit that the best theory for why everything is in existence, even scientifically speaking, the best hypothesis is that there is a super intelligent, super powerful being who has put and everything in place and maintains it. But that is considered, in their terms, non-scientific. Actually, it's the most scientific. But they're not real scientists. If they're real scientists, they should accept that. But they have decided that science means not to accept that there can be any supernatural or metaphysical cause. Of course, that has its, this attitude has its roots going back in history to the division of religion and science in Europe. We're going way back to Galileo and all that, where the church, it was very dangerous to be a scientist because the church dogma didn't allow you to believe anything except what they said. But as people kept on looking through microscopes and making various calculations, they found out that what the church said is wrong. And so they rejected religion. So that has a long history. That science has... Many scientists have an allergy to religious dogma. But that the best theory, or probably the only theory, that fits all that is observed in nature is that there is a supremely powerful and intelligent designer and controller. Maybe one reason the scientists have so much difficulty is that in accepting this is that if they have to go back to the Christian idea of a God who his main business seems to be chucking people into hell with no possibility of ever coming back, then it's very unattractive. It doesn't appeal to the intelligence. But if they can understand that this world is in one sense our creation also, because it's created due to our desire to enjoy separately from Krishna, and that Krishna is not this angry old man whose only pleasure in life is causing eternal misery to others. But Krishna is actually very kind and sweet and beautiful. And even if we blow it life after life, even if we forget him and reject him, he's always ready to accept us back. And maybe the scientists will have a change of heart. But if they don't, well, at least we should let other people know there is Krishna. Yes, please. How did I come to Krishna consciousness? All glories to Srila Prabhupada. I got one of his books. And in a land where at that time there was no temple of Krishna, but devotees had been there to distribute books. So I got a book. I went to the neighboring country where there was a temple. I didn't believe that there could be anyone who's actually that serious to practice what the book said, but because I was well turned off by Indian gurus. But when I found that there were such people, I felt obliged to join. So I did. It was the best decision I ever made in my life. In brief. Yeah, we have lots of questions.
All right, do you recall the name of the book that you read?
Oh, very well. What was the name of the book I read? It was Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Volume 2. And that's it, yeah. All right, you can show that. I have... That's also, I have one book here called My Memories of Srila Prabhupada, in which that's described. How I first met Srila Prabhupada in the form of one of his books. Do you want to ask a question? That Mahatattva wants to do that. He's using his role as the temple president. Yes, so what's your question?
My question, Maharaj, is that in Christianity, we say, I surrender to Jesus as my Lord and Savior.
Mm.
And then we see that most times Christians, they don't really give too much thought of Jesus throughout their day. Many of them don't actually surrender so much to Jesus. Similarly, you're talking about surrender in your class, and we may say that I surrender to Krishna and give my life to him, but quite often we don't give too much thought, or our devotion may seem superficial. How do we avoid the superficial?
How do we avoid superficial surrender? Simply saying, I surrender, and then we don't think of Krishna. We offer a little incense in the morning, and the rest of the day... Here's 2 minutes incense for Krishna and the rest of the day is for me. No. And then we have to learn what is actual devotion. Krishna says, Ananya Cheta Satatam Yomam Smarati Nityashaha Tasyaham Sulabham Parata Nitya Yuktasya Yoginaha. Krishna says, for one who is always conscious of me, who always remembers me, who always thinks of me, for such a person I'm I make myself easily available to such a person because such a person is always linked with me in bhakti yoga. So we have to practice that. We have to practice that. And as most people, they're living at home with their children, friends, family. They have social concerns, familial concerns, economic concerns. But they should try to dovetail that as far as possible in Krishna's service. And then when they get older, at the age of 50 or so, they can retire from that and then fully engage in Krishna's service. Yeah, so I guess you should. Thank you for asking so many questions. It's very nice.